You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Rob has a podcast. I am your host, Taryn Armstrong, and with me today is Brent Wolgamott. How are you doing, Brent?
I am doing great. I am so excited about this season of Big Brother Canada, and I have gotten to see almost all of the feeds. I've been such a good feed watcher, not that it's not my job, but I try and do as good as I can. I did attend the Indiana State Speech Tournament yesterday to judge it. So I missed out on a little bit of stuff. So there's a little bit of holes I need filling in. But overall, I am really thrilled with this cast, with this season. Big Brother Canada continues to impress with their casts. They always do a great job with that. But I'm very much looking forward to the way this shakes out, because there are lots of different ways I feel like this season could go right now, Taryn.
Yes, it's very interesting. We are here to recap the Sunday night episode of Big Brother Canada 7. It's our third episode of the season, and we have our second HOH and our second set of nominations. But it really feels like the first week, because it feels like the first week didn't really happen. It felt like a prelude.
It really did. It's like the prologue to a show, or like, previously on, but you never really, like, they had to fill in so much. I feel like that we lost out on a lot that happened during the first week, and I'm still bummed about that. Again, we love you, Big Brother Canada. Everybody and their mother, like, the only people that watch the live feeds that would be, enamored with what happens during the first week are going to watch your episodes anyway. There was absolutely no reason not to show us what's happening during the first week. Please turn the feeds on next year. Love you. Bye.
All right. Well, we are here to recap tonight's episode, the Sunday night episode of the show. And I've got to say, I'm kind of pleased. I'm cautiously optimistic about the direction that this episode seems to be pointing us. The first two episodes, as we mentioned, they had to fit an entire week into about 20 minutes of airtime, and that did not really work out. And that was kind of par for the course in terms of how much they usually show. Last season in particular was a pretty bad one in terms of proper representation on the episodes. This episode, however, they finally have some more time, and I do feel like they utilized it decently well here. I think that we got a decently accurate representation of what's happening with minimal amounts of missing important details.
I think that's probably true. I would have liked to have seen a little bit less of the Corey task and more of the overall arching power dynamics within the house. I don't think anybody ever really bought the fact that Corey was ever going to fail on her mission, or that, I basically what I'm trying to say is, I think she conceivably could have failed, but I think Big Brother was going to try to give her every benefit of the doubt they could have to try to make sure she completed this, and so they didn't have to evict her. And by the way, for those of you who are wondering, yes, they did tell the house guests ahead of time that she was immune for the week and that she wouldn't be competing in any competitions, because they couldn't take the chance that she could accidentally win HOH and then be evicted tomorrow. So they had to tell them ahead of time that she was immune. And then if she didn't complete the task privately behind closed doors, then they would have given her the hook, regardless of the fact that she had immunity. So they did not screw with the editing. That's really how things happen.
Yes. So Corey did complete her task. She made final two alliances. That messed me up again. Three final two
I heard
alliances
that before.
with Eddie, Kaylin and Damian. She succeeded there. I will say of the people that she made the alliances with, I do feel like Damian would probably be the most useful one. You know, Kaylin is, we haven't seen it a whole lot in the episodes yet, but she definitely has her own agenda. Eddie is somebody that is, he's easy to get along with, I think, once you sort of get to know him, but I don't know how dedicated he might be to any sort of like Kaylin thing. But Damian is a bit of a wild card in the sense that I really don't know where Damian's loyalties lie, and so
I don't either.
So having him on board, especially because he has more information on this blood veto than anybody else, could be good for her.
I mean, I not only do I have not have a great idea of what's going on with Damian and where his true allegiances lie and what ultimately is going to become of him in the game, but also I really don't have any clue what's happening with Eddie. Eddie is so agreeable and so nice and so social with people, and he's willing to say yes to anybody who's in the room with, you know, Adam, and you're giving him a compliment, or Dame while he's talking to him, or Corey, whether she's trying to make a final two. All that's great, but I don't know. Maybe he doesn't even know where his true loyalties lie. I'm not really sure.
Yeah, I was pleased with what I saw from Corey in this episode. She seemed very determined and strategic in the diary room, talking about her strategy for approaching people on the outs, because she knows that they're more likely to accept a deal. Also, it's less likely to come back to bite her, because they're less likely to compare notes with each other because they don't have as many allies. This is all great stuff to hear from Corey. I do wish that her like diary room persona matched her in the house persona a little more, because I still felt it in the clips where she's talking with other people, and definitely part of it is how nervous she is when she's trying to offer these final twos, but right. it's a little awkward here. Like, she's a little bit over the top, she's a little bit like
I was actually glad that they showed the fact that Kira turned her down initially, and you know, she was doing everything possible to get that final two deal with Kira, but Kira was not having it, and much to Kira's detriment, I would say, because I think, you know, if you're feeling like, and it seemed like Kira knew that they were going to be a possible nominee this week, depending on how things shook out based on their behavior last week. Overall, I think that it would have been good for them to agree to any final two deal. Anybody who you can get a vote from, if you think you're going to be a likely nominee, go ahead and say yes. You know, Kira has other ideas. Kira wants to play the game the way Kira wants to play the game.
Yeah, I think Kira is somebody that we should talk about, because Kira is currently the one of the two nominees here. I think if anything was left out of the episode, this is probably it. They talked about how Kira had lost some trust, how they were emotional last week, how they had broken down a few times, and that they kind of made it seem like that was the reason why they were on the block.
Well, what really happened, Taryn? Because, and I know that, and here you can tell I've been gone, because you interviewed Laura, correct? From the first house guest who was evicted, and she had some things to say that illuminated what's going on here. So, by the way, where can we find that at? Did you release that, or was it written? Or I must have missed it. Go ahead and tell us. Anyway.
It's in the podcast feed, you know, Big Brother podcast feed, or our reality TV or Hap Ups. It's also on RapazaWebsite.com. If you want to check out my interview with Laura, I only had 10 minutes with her, so you know, we couldn't get into all the details. But she did refer to a situation where Kira had apparently got. She was caught making something up about Kaylin. And so they got into a little bit of a thing. And I don't know if she if Kaylin was really doing whatever Kira made up about her, or if it was a lie or whatever, because we really don't entirely know what it was. But another part of this is that Kira did also say Dane's name a few times, that Kira had talked about that Dane had been in the room and how he might have some knowledge about the power, or that he might be going after Sam and Adam, because I think if I'm guessing, my guess is that what Kira said was Dane might go after Sam and Adam because that's what Kaylin told them. And so then Kaylin said, I didn't say that, you're lying, but Kaylin probably did say that. And so that kind of blew up. That combined with how emotional they were in the previous week led to a situation where Dane in particular, who heard that his name was being dropped, was thinking, I really want to make sure that Kira is on the block.
Okay, sorry. I was trying to listen to what you were saying, and I think I got most of it, but I'm still having trouble with the they pronouns, because I'm like, were you referring to Adam and Sam, or were you referring to Kira? I can't tell. I'm sorry. Don't be mad at me, people. Okay, moving on.
Yes. It's something that the house guests are struggling with in the house.
I'm struggling with it. I was trying to listen for real. I'm gonna tell you this story just to bring a little levity to the situation. I was trying to catch up on what happened yesterday, because as I said, I was judging the state speech tournament all day long, and I'm reading a recap, and it must have used the term they about 5,000 times, and I'm like, who are you referring to? I can't tell. Are you talking about the people you were just talking about, or are you referring to Kira? It's impossible for me to tell. So I'm doing my best, people. Anyway, Sharon.
To be fair, I do also have that problem with him and her a lot, where I'm like, wait, which one?
Yeah, which one? Yeah, I don't know.
The pronouns are not very specific.
You've done a great job. I saw you and Kirsten on the show today doing a great job with the proper use of the pronoun for Kira, and that is all well and good. I thank you guys so much for doing that. You are a beacon of hope that I will eventually get it right.
All right. Well, let's not praise ourselves for being able to use a word.
Well, you know, I can.
Well, there you go.
I screw up.
So that's why Kira seems to be on the block here, and they do seem to be in trouble and making decisions here that don't make a lot of sense. I think the reasoning behind basically when Corey goes to Kira and offers them a final two deal, Kira says, I don't know.
Maybe next week if I'm still here, you know.
Yeah. She's like, you need allies to stay this week. That'd be nice to have.
That would be nice. Oh my God.
Kira turning down this offer of an alliance, seemingly at least gathering one vote. You can kind of understand their logic where, you know, they might be coming from this idea of, well, I don't want to get caught playing too hard, making deals with the new person that everyone is trying to ostracize. That might put more of a target on my back, especially because I don't know this person very well and they might go blabbing. I do get that. But at the same time, I don't feel like they handled the situation particularly well where, Corey didn't come away from this conversation thinking, well, maybe we can work together in the future. Corey came away thinking, I just got flat out rejected.
Yes.
And I think that's where the mistake lies.
Yeah, I mean, talking about like bad gameplay here, I don't understand what Kira was doing in this instance, because it wasn't just as we're talking about right now, you know, the fact that Kira said flat out, you know, no, I'm not going to work with you. You know, Kira did leave the door open a little bit, but it's about what Corey's perceptions were and how Corey felt about it. And Corey felt that there was no way this was going to happen. And then you go look to see what Corey ended up doing with that. She ended up making final two deals with Kaylin and with Damian. And Kaylin is one, as we'll talk about, one of the people who is really working hard against Kira this week. So not only did you lose a potential vote, but now that person is now siding with somebody who is your mortal enemy in the house. And it almost feels like that Kira lost two or three votes by not going along with this final two deal with Corey.
Yes. So that's something else that I think the episode didn't cover is Kaylin's involvement in this plan against Kira. Kaylin very much wants Kira to go. They may cover more of this later, so we won't get too much into it before spoilers, but just be aware. Kaylin is a player in this game. Yes.
Yes, she is. I just want to point out for those of you who out there who are thinking about Kaylin, you saw her and you saw, oh, she's an older house guest, she's not going to give us much. They call her mama in the house. I refuse to call her mama. I call her by her real name, which is Kaylin. Kaylin is here to play. She is not going to be anybody's mama in the house. She is going to gun for the $100,000. Maybe playing a little bit too hard and a little bit too messy, but I will take that over anything else any day of the week.
Yes. And speaking of turning deals down, you get Mackie also on the block here.
Mackie having
turned down the offer during the HOH competition. And I feel like Eddie really handled this well, where Eddie managed to get a deal out of this and also played to win, right? Where normally you get offered a deal and it's like, hey, if you drop now, you will be safe. And if you say, no, I want to keep playing, then they're like, well, deal's off the table. But yes. Eddie manages to, they both have this thing where they're like, you know what? No matter what happens, we're both going to be safe. We'll keep each other safe. So we'll play it out. And then no matter what happens, we'll be safe. Mackie not involved in this deal. Mackie does not have any interest in even negotiating any kind of deal. He's just, let's play it out.
Yeah, it shows what a newbie he is that he didn't even try to do something here. He could have easily said, okay, between the three of us, let's all agree and we'll play it out and we won't. And then maybe he could have leaned on that if eventually Dane wins HOH and now he has to decide on who he's going to put up. And, oh, I can't put up Mackie. I'm going to call him Mackie because that's what we all call him, even though Dane's been saying the other thing. I can't put up Mackie because of the fact that we made that deal in front of Canada and I don't want to break my deal, because that's what's holding Eddie's deal, is the fact that Dane's like, well, I don't want to look bad in front of Canada. So that's why Eddie wasn't even on the short list for him. Not that he wouldn't have nominated him anyway, but my point being, there were rumblings initially about, you know, is Eddie going to potentially be a nominee? And Dane was immediately, you know, resistant. Like, there's no way I can do that because I swore in front of Canada that I wasn't going to put the guy up. And the kid really surprised me. I actually do think there is something to the fact that Dane, maybe Adam to a lesser extent, they really, I don't think that they were threatened by big comp beasts or anybody who performs well in challenges. I feel like that they are respectful of them and they're like, wow, let's really go toe to toe. So I'm curious if whether or not their overall attitude towards people who do well in competitions is something that sticks, or is it, or does it change as time moves forward? Sorry, does that make any sense?
I think it makes a little bit of sense. I think okay. that I think that
I have praise from you, Taryn. I love you.
I think that part of this is that it's like, oh, we're so proud of you, Eddie, for doing so well.
Yeah.
I think part of them doesn't expect Eddie to continue to do well in the competitions. Okay. I think if he continues to do well and he's still not like 100% on their team, they might start thinking, wait a minute, we need to start looking at Eddie again. But for now, I think they're just kind of like, oh, pat on the back. Look at you.
Okay.
And
attaboy.
Yeah, exactly. And that's again, that's where Eddie should be. And, you know, I don't know if he needs to be winning any competitions anytime soon necessarily. So maybe that should be where he stays, but we'll have to wait and see.
Just to be clear, I don't think that anybody's targeting Eddie. No one is, as far as I know. I'm just saying that Dane shut that down immediately by, you know, he would really, I think that means something to him. Not only his word in the game, but also how he's seen by Canada. So that's something to also look at going forward.
Yeah, we saw a lot of people throw this HOH, and this was an interesting HOH competition too, where they were balancing like little balls on an oversized golf club.
Yes.
And they had an option as well to attempt a hole in one, which would automatically give them the win. So it was like an endurance competition combined with a crapshooty kind of thing with some strategic elements in terms of, do you try to go for the crapshoot or do you try to win the endurance thing? I liked this a lot.
I loved it. Notwithstanding the fact that Taryn has me blocked on Twitter. That would be the day. But Trevor Boris has me blocked on Twitter. Trevor, you are a genius. I loved this competition. It was a great twist on an endurance level competition that goes for a while, which Big Brother has been shying away from, at least Big Brother US has been shying away from in years past, and gives the fans what they want. Add to that the fact that there was a get out of jail free card in terms of this hole in one, which seemed really hard to do. And oh, by the way, I couldn't believe Anthony came as close as he did to making that actual shot. But it was just it was great overall, well thought out. It played well on television. And there was drama there. I everything about it I loved. More of this, please.
I wish we got to see it on the feeds. I think that would have been even more fun.
I know. I've complained about that. What can I do, Taryn? I only have so much power.
Yeah. they're making fun of you at this point because on the feeds, when they cut the feeds, they're saying things you can do while the feeds are down. Go on a Twitter rant.
And that's what I do, as I do.
Yeah, you know? I feel like they could have added comma Brent to that sentence and it would have been exactly the same. We also saw Mackie campaigning to, I guess, stay off the block, but also he has this idea that he wants the two Kiras to go on the block. And the way he presents this idea was very strange, where he's just like, all right, look, let's take some deep breaths. And then now I've got something to say to you, and I want you to listen. And then if you tell other people, I want you to tell them that it was your idea. It's like, this is the ultimate goal of Big Brother's strategy is to incept people with your own ideas and make them think that they're their ideas so that they go and perpetuate those ideas by themselves. And you have no ties to it. Mackie is trying to just like instruct people to do that. Go tell people this was your idea.
Yeah, it was very paint by numbers inception. Like what a person with a second grade intellect would think of when they think of inception. Like, make sure to tell them this is your idea. And oh, by the way, let's talk about it really secret. And if it does get out, like, it just was terrible. And overall, I didn't even think he was that persuasive in terms of what he wanted to have happen.
Like, wouldn't it be fun if the two Kiras were on the block? Yeah, that would be fun, right?
Like, I mean, like, what? How does that help anybody? Like, I mean, God bless him. You know, he's a recruit, fine, or whatever, you know, newbie, wherever they found this guy, I don't know. But he doesn't know what he's doing in the house. After watching him at that point in time, on through now, and of course there was a point in time which we'll get to about what if he had even won the veto, whether or not he does win the veto, would he even use it on himself if he does win the veto? That was actually something that we had to think about. But I am hopeful that he will pick up the game if he's able to stay this week.
Yes. So Dane is our new HOH, and we pretty quickly get a segment about his dad. This is something that we had heard about in the preseason. He had talked about it a little bit. I do think this was an emotional scene where he's telling the story about his dad. Go ahead.
Well, what I was going to say was I had already typed out a tweet that said, I forgot how much I freaking hate HOH room reveals. And I was getting ready to put the hashtag BBCan7 on it. And then Dane just starts bawling. And I'm like, oh my God, I'll look like such an ass if I tweet this now. And I'm like, okay, I just like deleted the whole thing. And I think I typed something else, or I don't know what I said, but it still stands. Notwithstanding this great moment, I hate HOH room reveals. It just takes up a bunch of time. And I'd rather see it being used on the structure of the dynamics in the house. But it was pretty fantastic to see that. I was already like laughing at him. I'll be real with my emotions here. I was laughing at him from the outside when I first saw him say, oh, I have to win HOH to get a picture from home. And I'm like, oh my God, it's been like a week, dude. But then he illuminates on what happened and why he needs the picture of his dad. And that was like earth shattering to me. I heard that correctly, that his dad committed suicide. Mm-hmm. So that's really tough. And I feel all the feels in the world for him.
Yeah, it was emotional. And you saw the other house guests getting emotional as well. Dane is such a quirky guy that like he's like crying and like jumping and like telling the story. And then the way they cut it together, too, is that right after it's like, OK, Skechers time, get on the shoes. And he's jumping around and excited about the shoes. It was like maybe not the best juxtaposition there.
No, it wasn't great, but I do think he came off as really authentic, and I do feel like most people in the house, one person who is not being talked about as a potential nominee for anybody at any point in time in the future is Dane, and he has shown himself to be a really good competitor. I mean, he could go toe-to-toe, I think, with anybody in terms of any physical competition, but that endurance, I think, could have arguably been won by anybody in the house with any sort of sense of balance or endurance or determination, and he won that too. So it's amazing to me that he can be as good as he is in that respect, and yet no one is even thinking of that, because he seems like such a great guy. You can trust him. If he says something to you, you can take it home to the bank. Now, I don't think that he has a chance in hell to get to the end, because people would be, you know, worried about taking someone like him to the end. But for right now, I think he's great.
Yeah, there's something very genuine and raw about Dane. Yep. And he also knows the show really well, and he is playing very hard. So that's a deadly combination. Granted, I wouldn't necessarily say that he's playing smart when he's playing hard.
No, I think his charmingness is making up for his game deficiencies. Yeah. And that's what he has going for him right now. I agree with you. I think it was, I can't remember if it was your morning show with Mary or with Kirsten today, where you're talking about the fact that I saw this when he was like, you know, I've seen every season of this show, and then I've seen every season of the U.S. show, and I know this game. And oh, by the way, don't tell anybody about that. It's like when he, I think he was talking to Steph, like, or maybe it was Kiki, I can't remember. But yeah, he was just ridiculous in that moment. And I'm like, oh, dude, that's so gonna get out. Don't do that. But like I said, the fact that he's so charming in that moment makes it a little bit forgivable.
Yes. And so one of the things Dane is worried about here is the new, this connection with Sam and Adam, where they have this forbidden love, where they're not allowed, they can get close to kissing, but they can't actually kiss. And they, you know, they they're flirting, and they are, Sam is later going to be telling Adam that she is going to take him down to the end and get him that money, because he deserves it, and he'll be hers anyway after the show. So, it's all about these two, and Dane is going to be listening into that conversation.
On May 10th, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes is coming to IMAX and theaters everywhere.
What a wonderful day!
This summer, one movie event will reign.
It is our time. Apes hunt humans. That is wrong.
Bend for your king.
Never.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Only in theaters May 10th. Tickets on sale now. Rated PG-13. Some material may be inappropriate for children under 13.
Yeah, I never understood this from the moment it started happening on the feeds. I realized that Sam, and I've been writing my estimations of her from the beginning, she is not to be taken seriously in the house. I think she's going to be quickly evicted. However, I do not understand, in the early goings of the game with this many people in the house, and let's be clear, you started with as many people as you started at the beginning of the season in the house, because you lost somebody and then you gained somebody. So there's still a full cast of characters in the house. Why are you worried about this side piece that your boy Adam has? Like, let him have his fun. I was so taken with you on the update today when you were like, the brigade would never. Like, it would never, ever. And I'm like, yes, that is it, because you need votes in the house. You need people who will protect you. Anything can happen early weeks in Big Brother when there's this many disparate agendas in the house, this many people thinking Sam is on your side, arguably, especially if you give her any like a bit of attention or good social game or tender loving care. I mean, not the kind of tender loving care that Adam is giving her, but if you just like try to be nice to her and include her and everything, I feel like she's right there with you. And what do you mean she's like, I never understood this. They're like, well, wait, I'm worried about Adam because of Sam, and I'm worried about Sam for what? Like, what's she gonna do? It seems like everything that Sam is gonna do is what you want to do, or at least in the vicinity of it. So I just not understand this. Yeah, you made a point on the show today about the brigade. Yeah, they weren't happy with the fact that Hayden had Kristen.
Yep.
Yeah, Kristen. I almost said Kirsten. Sorry. Kristen. They had Kristen, but they let him have his fun. And then eventually when he was put up for nomination, he was put up beside her and they evicted her. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I feel like keeping Sam in the game is great for this alliance, if you believe in this alliance, because if Sam goes on the block, Adam is likely to go up next to her, and then you can control what happens. But why would you do that yourself? I mean, I know ultimately he did not nominate her, but he wants to nominate her. And I just don't get it. I just don't. Yeah. It's like big move-itis.
And Sam going up next to Adam and then being sent home is exactly her purpose in the brigade setup. That's the whole point, is that instead of being nominated against each other, they're nominated against their parachutes, their side pieces, and then they send the side pieces home. And you know, this is not the moving company. Adam is not McCray. He is not going to spill the beans to Sam unless he feels genuinely betrayed by these guys. Adam is a guy's guy. He wants to work with these guys more than he wants to work with Sam. He is like totally gaga-eyed for Sam, but he is still like bros before his girlfriend, right? Like, he is very much that kind of guy. And so you don't really need to worry about him in that regard. You only need to worry about him if you start getting paranoid and start taking shots at his girl, because that creates the tension that breaks the alliance apart.
It's really astounding to me. Like, they have it. It's such a great setup, Taryn. And I don't even think this whole brigade-esque plan was great from the jump, but it seems like it's sort of developed into something. I mean, I know that we haven't really talked about the overall structure of the house right now, but you know, the four guys that are in the brigade-esque plan, but I know they're called the Pretty Boys, but I thought it would be so much better if they were called the Adams, because it's like Adam is A and Dane is D and mm-hmm. Anthony is A and M is Mark. So it could have been Adam. I can't believe Adam didn't suggest Adam.
Wasn't that is that an Amon tweet? I feel like somebody tweeted that.
Yes,
out.
Yes, yeah. I would. If it was Amon, I apologize. I wasn't trying to steal anything from you. I honestly couldn't remember who it was to give them credit. So if it was Amon, good job.
I mean, really though, they should have thought. Grant, I think that gives Adam too much power if you name the alliance after him. Though I think that's the problem.
I'm just being fun. Anyways, yes, I agree, and I am also aboard with Kirsten when she was like, "Do we have to call them the Pretty Boys?" But you know what, Kirsten, as I've learned this season, you know, whatever anybody identifies, that was what you have to give them their respect. So. You know, they want to be called the Pretty Boys Alliance. That's what I'm going to call them. So there you go.
The Pretty Boy Alliance. Yeah. So they Dane is he's worried about Sam. He's considering nominating her. He also considers Chelsea, puts Chelsea on the short list for nomination, but ultimately goes with Kira and Mackie. We're going to have to see where that plays out in the following episodes. Something else that we should talk about. I don't know. Where should we go from the room with the papers? Right, so we're introduced to this
yes.
in the episode. There are files in the room, and we still get no explanation here. We know that there's a blood veto, and I think we're meant to make a connection that these papers have something to do with the blood veto, which is my hope, right? Like my hope is that this has some kind of purpose, and it's not just going to be like week number, whichever week the person that production loves is in trouble. Now there's a fan vote, and then that person that gets the fan vote goes into the room, and now all of a sudden the door opens and they get the blood veto and all the papers were worthless to begin with. I would not like to see that. I would like to see that these have something to do with getting the power, that if you are the person that figures out the cipher, you manage to get...
That would be so great.
Yes.
And that's a great story. Maybe you can put that on a t-shirt, but there's no freaking way that Big Brother Canada is doing something that cool. Like, I would love it if they did. But there's no freaking way that any of these papers have anything to do with what's eventually going to happen. Like, I mean, I'm with you guys. I heard you complaining earlier that, you know, if this doesn't have anything to do with anything, if it's just there to troll the house guests and make them think that they should be looking at all these papers and going through any information that's listed there, then it's a troll on us. Mm-hmm. And if so, then Big Brother, because we are the ones who have to watch them talk about this.
Yeah, and we have to watch them study these papers. There's a reason they don't give them books in the Big Brother house.
It's not
very fun to watch.
Not fun to watch at all. Like, I really hope... Like, just to be clear, when that room opened, were those files all there? They were, right?
Yeah, like, they
weren't there initially.
Yeah, okay. They then appeared in the room after, because when Adam first discovered the room and showed people it was empty, Damien first discovered the room, there was a single piece of paper, he took it, Adam yes. found the room, it was empty, and then Damien once again was the first person to go in and find that now there are a bunch of files there. So interesting that, you know, Damien keeps coming back there.
So they purposely put them there.
Yeah,
yes.
they're there okay. for some purpose.
I couldn't remember if they were there when they first discovered the room, you know, after Damien had already, you know, come out of it. Wow, that's interesting. I have no idea. I wish it was something like where you found something and there was like a code list and then you had to find another piece of paper. That would be cool. But, you know, what I've learned about Big Brother Canada is they only want their twists to happen when they want them to happen. And something open-ended like this, I feel like it's just not something that's going to play well on the show. So... maybe there's something there that can be useful for whenever they decide to activate this challenge or this blood veto or whatever the heck it is. But until now, I feel like we're just spinning our wheels.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like there's a lot of potential for this, especially with the spy theme, where sure, the yes. first one introduced doesn't make any sense. There's nothing you can do with it. But then the second one is introduced, and maybe that sheds a little bit of light on the first one, and so on and so forth. I'm not entirely convinced that's not going to be it. I am obviously pessimistic, but I do think there's a small chance they might be trying something like that. It won't be as good as we want it to be, but it might be similar enough that it's kind of cool.
All right, well, here's hoping.
Yeah, because I think their problem would be, like, it needs to be used. It needs to be found, so they can't, like, actually have it be that open-ended. They need, and they also probably want it to, you know, go to the right people that are going to use it in the right way. So,
oh yeah.
So yeah, we'll have to see where that goes. Another surprise in the episode, we got Wendy's is back, and we get the Wendy's segment once again. But instead of just random Wendy's people now, it's Aika behind the counter.
By the way, because she responded to my tweet, I said, did they really put Aika Wong in a fast food uniform just to say, enjoy, like when she was handing him the bags? Apparently she had a name tag. Maybe did you see what the name tag said?
I didn't look.
She died at the name tag. Or maybe it just said Aika. Maybe the chat room can tell us what the name tag was. But overall, I was like, I hope she gets utilized for more than just that. Like this season, like she needs to come and host a competition or something. Like, let's have some fun.
Yeah, I mean, I guess like she's around, so yeah, they're using her. Because I mean, you know, the people who are just watching the show, they didn't see all of the pregame interviews, so like you know, they haven't just seen Aika a bunch, so they were probably like, oh, it's Aika.
Apparently, it said Aika, by the way. So when she was saying that she died at the name tag, it must have been the fact that like it was a Wendy's name tag with Aika on it, you know, and that's like crazy to think that Aika would be your server at or your cashier at Wendy's.
Wouldn't it be fun if there was a like a competition or at least a question about like who were the past Big Brother alum that served Wendy's, and if people were smart enough to keep that to themselves, then they'd be the only ones that had an answer. But they're not going to. Obviously, they're going to tell everyone like Dane did.
Right. I don't know. Yeah. Could be fun. It's Aika.
So there you go. I let me know if you guys have any questions in the chat.
I do have one ahead. Question. Why was Chelsea on the short list? Can anyone explain this to me? Like, as far as I could tell, even like watching the feeds up until when I did and left, I didn't understand why he was thinking about nominating Chelsea. I mean, or was that just something like he literally had his mindset? Because I know he went, I saw him go to Kira and to Mackie and both tell him, hey, I'm going to put you up, you know, basically. And of course, he told, you know, Mackie, don't worry, you know, you're not the target and everything. But was he just so set on his two nominees that he didn't really want to put anything else on the short list? Or what was that?
I mean, I think it was because she is connected to Sam. And and so if he wanted to target Sam, Chelsea is another person in that realm. And it's really, people are really looking at it like it's Sam and Adam and Chelsea. And so Chelsea really is in a little bit of danger when it comes to those two. If, for example, Sam and Adam were nominated next to each other in a future week, and then one of them won the veto, it would not surprise me if Chelsea is the one that went up as the replacement. So
now that I think about it, also Chelsea has, you know, as shown in the episode, not for the fact that we have seen it on the feeds too, but she shown in the episode how she was close with Kira during week one and it kind of backfired on her a little bit. So she's been trying to distance herself from Kira.
I will say, I think that she has been pretty successful in distancing herself from Kira.
So.
I haven't seen anybody really talk about it at all. So
I agree.
I personally don't think that was, I think it was her association with Sam. And I don't think her association with Kira really had any kind of input in terms of Dane putting her on the short list. So, you know, she did like one of the first conversations that we saw in the feeds as we saw when we were podcasting is you relayed to us, which was Kira and Chelsea talking and seemingly very close. And then shortly after that, Chelsea was all about like, yeah, Kira going up on the block. And I was like, whoa.
Yeah, yeah. Yes, thank you. Yes, I saw people call me out on that. Doom, I see you in the chat calling me out. I'm like, I was podcasting as I was going. What do you want from me? How do I know who's telling the truth here? So, yes, I quickly found out that Chelsea, that any relationship she has with Kira is not worth the paper that it was printed on.
Yes. Jaxer in the chat wants to know who is in the best position for a deep run. I will say myself, there hasn't really been anyone that stood out to me yet strategically. There are people who are in a good position right now, but that doesn't really mean a whole lot when it comes to long-term game, especially when I don't see a ton of people actively maintaining their good position. It just seems like a lot of people are just kind of there in a good position.
You know, go ahead. Who I think is doing, I don't mean to interrupt you, I'm sorry, but who has really done a lot better than I thought they were going to do, Anthony. Mm-hmm. Anthony, going into the season, I was laughing at Melissa because she eventually picked Anthony, I think, with like the last pick. Like, she mm-hmm. could have had the mystery box, which was Holly, who didn't even make it in the house, or she could have had Anthony. And I was laughing at her that she didn't pick the mystery box because I thought Anthony has no chance. But he has shown to be really, really cool and chill in the house. He's not been the, for lack of a better word, asshole that I thought he was going to be. He's not trying to portray himself as some sort of smooth talker. He's not a ladies' man in the house. He seems very nice and very amenable to working with anybody who's willing to talk to him and have an honest conversation. I am feeling very good about him. Much better than I did preseason.
Yeah, definitely. I think that he has been the biggest in terms of turnaround, opinion wise. I think that he is. I initially thought that maybe Mark had also been a big turnaround. Mark, though, I think is just a little bit better than what I anticipated.
Just a little bit.
Anthony is a decent amount better than I anticipated. I'm still a little bit reluctant to really go all in on Anthony in terms of like how well
I'm
he's
not
doing.
Either.
But he definitely has been doing pretty well. He's one of the more connected people. He doesn't have a ton of like solid like duo kind of allies, but he does have a couple, and he is somebody that is not on anybody's radar, and he is working very well with within the confines that he has right now. So that's it's very good for Anthony. That said, he can be a little pushy sometimes. Like he plays a strong game. He is not afraid to push his own agenda, and okay. I worry about that. If I'm worried about something, it's that I feel like he could be sitting back right now, and he doesn't always sit back, so that worries me a little bit. But beyond that, I do like where Anthony is. And other than that, I do think that Chelsea is in a pretty decent spot. I think that she is decently protected by the two mm-hmm. meat shields in Sam and Adam. I like how smart she is and how connected she is. I also like Steph and Kiki. I like where they are positioned. They are kind of a duo sitting around playing a little bit of both sides, trying to just maintain good social game and maintain connections. And they also talk a lot of strategy amongst themselves. I've talked about this on a live feed update before, but they're not as proactive as I'd like them to be. But beyond that, I do like their positioning. Really, Steph more than Kiki. Kiki kind of gets a little more involved in things that can put her in danger than Steph. And I do think that Steph is in a better position regarding that. So those are the people I think that I'd feel good about. But like I said, nobody really standing out to me a whole lot right now. Eddie is really another person that I think has potential here, but he is so visible. People talk about him a lot, and right now it's good, but I do worry that it's eventually going to sour and that eventually this is going to turn into a target. So I like Eddie a lot, and I hope that he can do well, but I do think that he might be on a sinking ship with Kaylin, and he will have to maneuver away from it potentially moving forward. So a lot of things to consider here, but yeah, like I said, it's early, and nobody really standing out to me at the moment.
Well, as pointed out on the show earlier today with Kirsten, they cast fans of the show, but it does not feel like they have the same effect as they had last year. Like last year, there were like tons of actual super fans in the house who were playing hard. This year, it feels like there are certainly some super fans in the house or in some fans in the house, but it doesn't seem like there are as many. And the ones that they have are not playing quite as hard. They're being a little bit more chill with their overall game. That's how it feels to me.
I think a lot of the fans are more show fans than like live feed fans.
Yeah,
I haven't heard anyone talk about any podcasts, whereas in the previous season you would have heard a few people talking about podcasts. And so, you know, they're less involved in the community. I think they're a little less capable of playing the kind of aggressive play that we saw from Big Brother Canada 6. And maybe that's kind of what casting was going for with this one, because the editors had such trouble keeping up with those players that maybe this is a little bit more their regular speed, and I think maybe they like that. So I'm fine. I would prefer these very aggressive high speed players, but if we get a better show out of it and they can't really handle that level of gameplay, I'll take this too. It's still I think better casting than US often does, and
way better casting than US does. I mean, there's so many people in this cast that to me they don't fit into a preconceived notion of what casting would expect from them. Even somebody like Damien, who you look at him and you think, oh, he's just some pretty boy meathead, but he's not behaving that way at all. And I don't know if somebody who is as interesting and as complex as Damien is would make it through casting in US, but in Canada they put him in the house.
Damien is somebody I think worth talking about. He is also somebody, he came in with very little knowledge of the game. Yes. Obviously got himself into trouble in the previous week. I love that you called him a pretty boy despite the fact that he is not one of the pretty boys.
He's actually the prettiest to me. I don't know what I said. Yeah, I mean, like of the people who could be a pretty boy, he is the ultimate pretty boy, and yet he's not in the alliance.
I said he kind of looks like an anime character, but like with tame hair, you know, like his hair is a little like if you took an anime character and you just like you cut down their hair to reasonable levels, it would look like Damien. And he's very good. He's very chill, and he's able to talk to people in a way that's very non-threatening, and makes people feel comfortable, and people just, they like him. Everybody wants Damien on their side, and that's great for him as long as he's able to maneuver those waters. He's not the sharpest strategically, and I don't know if he can maneuver those waters correctly, but he has socially put himself in a pretty good spot. And so I'm interested to see where he moves from here.
I'm also very interested in him as well. And I'm also interested in Steph, as we talked about earlier. She's positioned well within the house as far as I can tell. And I like what she's doing. I'm very intrigued to see what ultimately becomes of Kaylin. Can she get herself out of what I think is a seemingly inescapable hole that she has dug for herself right now, with all of her agenda pushing and lies that she's told and what she wants to have happen this week? I am curious about whether or not she can get out of that. I'm here for a Kaylin HOH next week. And by the way, her decision to tell the house guests that she was 29 years old only looks worse as time goes on, because those lights in Big Brother Canada are unforgiving in the house. And she doesn't look good, Taryn. She does not look 29 years old.
Well, really, like, to me, the even worse thing is pretending that she has no children and now has the nickname Mama K. Like,
it gained her nothing.
Yeah.
It gained her nothing. They still see her the way they would have seen her all along.
Yeah.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino.
That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes.
Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
All right. Well, we're going to head into spoiler territory here for a brief spoiler conversation. So if you want to avoid that, you can head out now. You can follow.
Who are you? If you're watching Big Brother Canada, come on. If you go through all the hoops to watch Big Brother Canada, I don't even know why we do a non-spoiler territory thing. Anyway, moving on. Sorry.
You really should. I think our conversation without spoilers should indicate to you that even on an episode where we're like, hey, they did a pretty decent job, there's still a ton behind the scenes that that you are missing if you are not caught up on the feeds. And it does not hinder your enjoyment of the show. I think it really enhances it.
It really enhances it, especially with Big Brother Canada.
Yeah. So anyway, you can find us on Twitter. I'm at Armstrong. Taryn, Brent is at One Lucky Gay. I will be back tomorrow morning at 11 a.m. Eastern to update you on everything that happened today on the Big Brother Canada 7 live feeds. And then tomorrow night, Brent will be back and Melissa will join us as well as we do our first roundtable of the season. We'll kick off the stock watch with some fun new rules and have fun with all of that stuff. And it'll be great. So check that out. And then Thursday night, we will be back after the live eviction where we will lose another person from the Big Brother Canada 7 house. And we'll have some fun with that as well. So thank you if you are, leaving now, but it's time to get to the spoilers. I don't have the song. I should have the song, but I don't.
The Office of Civil Defense has issued this warning.
Boom, boom, boom. Now you gotta do the whole thing now.
Oh, no, this is a spoiler. Boom, boom, boom. I can't even remember what happens from here on out, but that's
right.
What it ends.
All right, Brent, I won't vote you out.
All right. Yes, I forgot. Thank you. I totally forgot the connection from Laura not wanting to do the twerking thing. Okay, go ahead.
There you go. Okay, so we're into the spoilers now. The veto has been played. There is a new twist here on the veto where Dane is not allowed to play in the veto competition as the HOH, and he is not even replaced by another person. It is five players in the veto, Dane not competing. I don't know if this is a one-time thing or a new element to the game, but this is what happened this week. We'll have to see what happens in future weeks. We'll probably get some kind of answer during the veto competition episode. But Brent, it seems like based on your facial reactions that you are not quite a fan of this.
I mean, look, I heard you guys today when you were talking on the morning update, you and Kirsten, about the fact that, you know, of the twists that they could have come up with, this is not that big of a deal. I suppose I'm going to have to wait to see how it is in practice. But if this is permanent, and chat seems to think that it is permanent, at least that's what they were saying earlier today. This is a downer for me. I don't know why. Why do this? I mean, to me, the HOH spinning out of control, like winning the veto themselves, and using it and backdooring somebody, or, you know, having another plan and deciding to change things up, is one of the best parts of the show. It's where we get some of our best television. I mean, and aside from that, the fact that eventually this rule is going to have to go by the wayside, you can't have the HOH not compete at like final six or final five or final four when they're trying to protect their own nominations against something very bad happening. Otherwise, it defeats the point of winning HOH in the first place. So I think this sucks. Like, why are you messing with this? I understand that it's okay to have twists in the game, and that twists for the sake of twists is not necessarily a bad thing if they are thought out, well thought out twists. But I don't understand the point of this. I guess, judging by what you guys had to say on the morning update, the point is for the nominees to have a greater chance of winning the veto because now they're not competing against the HOH, who set their nominations, and half the time other people are throwing it, so maybe they'll win. But it just seems a little too cute by half, and I'm not here for it. I don't know what they're going to do as we get down to even final eight, final seven. It's very important that the HOH wins the veto and locks in their nominations to protect against something crazy happening. I have to believe in spirit you're with me on this, but overall you're more worried about what Big Brother Canada might have done in place of this ridiculous decision, and thus you're like, okay, well, we're just gonna smile and pretend it's okay. But, and I'll just speak for me, in reality it sucks. I think it sucks, and I heard what Kirsten said on the update about, well, it saves the HOH from themselves, by, you know, because we've seen so many people, like Johnny last year went HOH and veto in the same week, and it shows what a big compies there are. But I like that fact. The more savvy house guests are the people who know not to do that. So I'm not gonna like this. This sucks.
Yeah, I mean, they're messing with a winning formula, in my opinion, but they do that all the time. So in terms of degrees with which they mess with this formula, I'm kind of okay with this one. It's a little bit Extinction Island-y, where it's like, okay, for one season. Let's see how it plays out. And I'm okay with seeing how it plays out. Obviously, I, again, don't have faith in Big Brother Canada to make the right decision with it after the season ends in terms of, like, did it work? Did it not work? If it didn't work, they'll probably keep it. And if it did work, they'll probably ditch it. But in terms of, like, a one season experiment, I'd kind of be on board. I don't think it impacts things as much as a lot of other twists, like the random powers, coup d'etats, battle of the blocks, third nominees, whatever it is, instant evictions, triple evictions. Those have massive impacts on the game that I think this will not quite have as much of an impact. So I'm okay with it in that sense. And I'm interested on an intellectual level to see how it impacts the game, because I'm not quite sure.
You always talk about the fact that, you know, the show is always trying to neuter HOH. Yes. Like the whole, like, winning HOH is a big enough deal on its own. And you only have a limited amount of power because you get to name two nominees, and then if the veto's used, you get to name the replacement, but you're not able to compete the following week. If you continue to neuter the HOH's power, I mean, the great thing about the people who win HOH is that they're gamers, that they want to play the game, that they're hardcore here to try to compete and give you something interesting. And why would you take that away from people like that? Anybody who's willing to stick their neck out and win HOH, I want to see them in a veto competition.
Well, I think one of the reasons why I'm interested in this is because of the unforeseen consequences of a lot of twists, right? Where a lot of twists, they have an immediate payoff according to the person who thought of the twist. Like, oh, we'll reveal secrets and that will cause drama, and they don't really think about the unforeseen consequences, the lasting impact of that kind of twist. This twist doesn't really have as much of an immediate impact, but I do think it might have unforeseen consequences that I'm interested to see play out. For instance, maybe it certainly looks like it is bad for the HOH, but maybe being bad for the HOH is ultimately a good thing for the HOH, because if the HOH wins and then is not competing in the next two major competitions, those are two competitions the HOH is not winning, to give some credit to Kirsten in terms of saving themselves from having to win two competitions in a row, but also just not even competing in general takes them, helps the perception of them go away as a comp threat, more so than even just competing and doing well in the veto competition. And then, so not competing in the veto, not competing in the next HOH, by that time you're kind of going to start to forget that they even were the HOH. And so if you just win a bunch of HOHs, then you're winning one competition every 2 weeks. And you'd still be dominating the game HOH wise. But in between that, there'd be three separate competitions that you're not even competing in, probably. So, and I'm not saying it will play out that way, but it might lessen the impact that winning HOHs does to your threat level. So there are ways that I'm interested to see how this interacts with typical Big Brother strategy, and it could go wrong. It could be bad, and it could make the HOH worse, or it could make gameplay more stagnant, but, I'm interested on a experimentational level to see where it goes.
I mean, obviously, me bitching about it is not going to change anything. So it's here to stay. So I'm curious about how it's going to affect things going forward. And not only that, but is there a point in time when they stop doing that? Like, if is the HOH going to, again, I worry about Final Six, Final Five, Final Four. Is the HOH not allowed to compete for the veto then? Really? Is that what you're telling me? Because that fundamentally changes the way the game is played.
I think they have to, do it Battle of the Block style, where it ends after five or six weeks.
I hope.
Because, definitely after, again, we can't give too much credit to the twist creators, but hopefully they recognize that by even final 10, final 9, the HOH should be competing in these competitions, because it would that at that point, I do think the power balance shifts a bit too much. So we'll see how all that plays out. So that is happening with the veto competition. Adam is going to be the person that eventually wins this veto competition. Chelsea and Anthony were also playing alongside the nominees, but Chelsea and Anthony were both throwing this competition. They did not want to win. So of the three people trying, two of the nominees and Adam is going to be the winner. And Sam is going to be very happy about this. Gives him a big old hug celebration. They talked about how high
she
jumped.
And why is that? Why is Sam giving him a big old kiss and hug after he wins? Because of the fact that Sam felt uneasy about her position within the house, because Dane is playing so badly, for God's sake, Aaron. Can you please tell me why Dane, who is the super fan of the show, would make somebody like Sam, who is obstinately part of his alliance, why in the world is he making her feel like she could possibly be the replacement nominee?
Yes. I mean, basically, we talked about it this morning. He didn't have a backup plan for what, like, so Dane has been considering, and Kaylin was kind of the person who pushed this onto him. And then he talked with Anthony about it. And Anthony agrees, by the way, with Dane's idea that, Sam needs to go. Anthony is all aboard that. Anthony is pushing it very hard as well.
Why?
And so Dane, between Kaylin and Anthony, is all about, let's get Sam out of this house. And so if one of the nominees had won the veto, then he would have used, or he probably would have put Sam on the block as a replacement with the intent to send Sam home. And so when Sam and Chelsea confronted Dane and said, hey, what happens if one of the nominees wins the veto, in particular Kira, who is the target right now, Dane was like, haven't thought about what I'm supposed to tell you. Haven't prepared a lie yet. So I'm going to say, let's deal with it when it comes.
Not good under pressure. I couldn't believe this when I saw, well, what are you doing here? Like, how in the world can you not at least come up with a name or say, well, you know what? Or, he could have at least said to her, well, what do you think? You know, what do you think? Well, I mean, I'll take, like, I respect your opinion. Like, who do you think would be somebody good to go up against Mackie if Kira wins the veto? Anything besides what he did, which was essentially, I'm not going to tell you, which then made her feel like she was expendable and possibly going to be the replacement nominee. And, you know, this may mean nothing in the end because he was able to somewhat cover it up. I say, oh, well, you know, it was always going to be Damien. That's what he ended up going with, that Damien was going to be the replacement nominee. And I just wanted to let you know that, like, you were never, ever going to be a nominee. But it was so badly played, and I don't understand why. How he made an error like this?
Yeah, it's not good. There's a lot of not good gameplay going on. Adam wins the veto, which means that Mackie and Kira will be staying on the block. Mackie has a conversation. First Kira has a conversation with Dane, where Kira tells Dane that that they're not going to be going after them. You know, you are safe. I will not put you up. Don't worry about it, Dane. You're good. So Dane is like, okay, I'm feeling that. Dane still wants Kira out at this point, despite the fact that Adam wants Mackie out, because Adam heard from Anthony that Mackie is coming for him. So he feels like he needs Mackie gone. So he's been trying to convince Dane, but Dane has not been convinced, has that conversation with Kira, feels okay about it, has a conversation with Mackie where he asks him something similar. What happens next week? Would you put me on the block? Mackie says, probably.
Maybe. Yeah, I know, right? I was like, what? You've got to be kidding me. And I realized that Dane doesn't have a vote this week, since he's the HOH, but why would you tell him the truth here? Just lie to him. Like, do you not know that? I mean, I guess there is something to be said for your word meaning something within the Big Brother house. And maybe he thought, well, if I say, you know, well, maybe you could be, but, you know, maybe not, you know, like, I'll do, I don't know.
You put me on the block, so it would only be fair, right?
Just say no.
This guy, man.
Let's be clear. He could save himself this week. Like, with Kaylin pushing so hard for Mackie to stay, it actually may do the reverse and end up getting him evicted because lots of people don't like Kaylin. So they may want to take a shot at her by getting rid of Mackie. So, I mean, there is a way that he could go home or he could stay, but, like, I don't understand why you would just say that to him. Like, I could put you up on the block next week. Yeah, like, I mean, I guess he thinks maybe he gets points for honesty or something, but that's not Big Brother, Terrence.
Yeah, unsurprisingly, after this conversation, Dane is going to give the go-ahead to the pretty boys that, you know what, if you can round up the votes, I will not oppose the sending Mackie home plan. He still is very much like, he then tries to use it, turn it around and be like, but if we do this, Adam, I think that means you owe me one, and then we should get rid of Sam. Thanks.
Again, stupid. Why are you putting up, like, did Ryan Ballantyne, like, take possession of these people? Why are you putting up your own alliance? Why are you putting up people who are on your side? I don't understand. Why are you worried about Sam? There are, like, 5,000 freaking other people in the house you've yet to worry about who are all gunning for the $100,000. Why are you worried about this girl? They are a massive target in front of you for anybody in the house who might want to put you up, Dane, or Anthony, or Mark. Why are you worried? I know Mark's not on board, but why are you worried about Sam? I don't understand it, Karen. It's so perfect. You have this big, fat couple who, with one part of whom is a comp beast, and the other whom annoys the living shit out of people sometimes, and they're flirting together. They are a massive target. Why are you going to do the dirty work for other people? Why are you even trying to push that as part of your agenda? Let other people worry about that. Why are you worried about that?
Yeah. So, I mean, this is perfect for this too. I'm reading tweets from BB Daily. Anthony talking to Dane. The only reason I'm saying get rid of Mackie now is because he's 100% taking shots at Adam. Dane responds, "We are saving Adam so many times now. Adam doesn't realize it because Adam is so effed by Sam." Where's this even coming from?
Well, how is he effed by Sam? I mean, I know how he could be. Okay. But I'm just saying, within the game, how does that not help you? Or maybe a better way to phrase it is, how does that hurt you? How does Sam having a little bit of influence or a lot of influence over Adam, how does that hurt you? It does not.
It's one of those things like
he's so myopic about the way he sees this.
I think the kernel of this idea started with the Sam versus Kaylin thing. And so Dane feels like they can trust Kaylin, and Adam is feeling like maybe they can't trust Kaylin. And Dane felt like maybe that was a little bit coming from Sam, and Kaylin was pushing the idea that it was coming from Sam because Kaylin has been pushing the idea that they need to target Adam and Sam. And in order to deflect Kaylin away from Adam, he's been pushing her onto Sam. And I think in the act of doing that, he not only demonized Sam in Kaylin's eyes, but he demonized Sam in his own eyes. And this, like, it just kind of snowballed into its own thing where he then thinks that Sam is manipulating Adam, and he feels like Sam is the problem here, and it feels like Sam is being paranoid. He starts acting weird. He starts potentially targeting Sam. He makes her paranoid. She acts paranoid. He's like, "See how paranoid she is. Look what she's doing to you, Adam." And it's become this big thing out of absolutely nothing. And it's very bad.
Apparently Doom's in the chat saying that big news. Apparently Anthony wants Mackie out now, or he wants Mackie to stay. I can't read whatever.
Well, the tweet seems to be Anthony saying that that they should get rid of Mackie, which is a little bit of a shift here. And it would mean
now
a lot.
You're saying that. Oh, my God.
This has been going a little bit back and forth for a while. I think it will continue to go back and forth for a while between Mackie and Kira. I think that Kira has been handling the campaigning better than Mackie, but that's not saying a ton. I still don't think that they're doing a wonderful job with the campaigning. They don't know enough of the house dynamics to name their targets properly. For instance, I believe they talked about targeting Mark to Damien maybe it was Anthony. I don't remember. They did talk about targeting one of the pretty boys to some of the other pretty boys.
Yes.
But for the most part, they're doing the right thing by focusing on Kaylin, which is what they should be doing. Because if everyone looks at it as Kira targeting Kaylin, most people want Kaylin to be targeted. So they feel good about that.
Show them where your gun is pointed. That's all you need to do. Like, if your gun is pointed at Kaylin, then they know, okay, well, you're not aiming at me. And that's great, because if you're not going to nominate me and go after me, then I'll keep you. But if they're not, if you're seen as a loose cannon, then people are worried. And so I feel like that anybody who ends up staying this week is going to be the one who does a better job of showing people that they're not a loose cannon.
Yes. Anything else we need to cover here before we wrap this up, Brent?
I don't know. I can't with the dumb house with the strategizing. Dane is like somebody who I think I read. I can't remember who tweeted this. Or maybe it was in the chat. Like, he won't shut his toothless pie hole is what they said. He just is like constant stream of consciousness, and whatever comes to his mind, he just says it. And in some ways, like, I think that works for him, as I said, because it can be somewhat endearing and thus charming, and you take him at his word, but it's not exactly fun to watch. It's not great gameplay. It does feel a little bit like when they were talking about having the big plan. This is before the veto. was won by Adam. They were having the big plan to backdoor Sam. I'm like, how is Adam going to feel about that? Like, you didn't, like, you cooked up a plan behind his back and put his number one ally on the block who would have been doing whatever you told her to do. Like, how does that even make sense?
It's so frustrating, too, because, like, she's the biggest target of everyone else. Everyone else wants Sam out. You'd be doing their work for them. She is such a big shield for you. It's so bad.
I know. But I'm hoping that the messiness leads to some really, really fun, interesting gameplay, even if it's not the best gameplay that we could have. But right now, it's really trying my patience. I'm glad that I was actually thrilled, by the way, that Adam won the veto, because I'm like, okay, that's great. So Sam's not going anywhere, because I agreed with what you said on the show earlier today. Mm-hmm. I want this to percolate a lot more. I do not want this to, you know, like, shoot our wad and, you know, like, one day and it's over with. Like, I want them to have blue balls. Like, they cannot go after Sam, and they're stuck with her for now, and they are their hand is being stayed. They cannot go after Sam for a while. I'm actually hoping for an Adam HOH next week, so that Sam will stay in the house even longer, and they'll be just jonesing to go after. That'd be great.
Yeah, it would be interesting. In terms of Kira versus Mackie, I'm honestly kind of indifferent. I'm liking the back and forth. I'm kind of rooting for Kira. I feel like they have a little more potential in the game. They haven't been very fun on the feed so far, but if they can fade back into the background, get some allies again, I do feel like they could eventually do something. Whereas Mackie, I feel like is just Mackie. I don't think we're ever going to get anything else.
No. He is terrible. He's like a recruit level. But on the other hand, Kira, like, honey, come on. Yeah. Like, give me a little bit more fun. This is moping around and being miserable. It does not make for great feeds or even great television. So I need to see more fight from Kira.
This is actually a good question here before we wrap up from Blake in the chat. Who is Corey really with? My answer to that is that I'm not entirely sure either. Exactly. She has connections with Kaylin and Eddie, obviously. Kaylin and Eddie, by the way, have compared notes and realized that Corey made a deal with both of them. And so they are a little sketched out about that.
Of course, she doesn't know that they've talked, but if I was her, I'd probably go to the people. I don't know if I would or not. I was going to say, in my heart of hearts, I want her to go to the people that she made a final two deal with and say, look, I just want you to know this for me, okay? You know that I have immunity this week. That was a part of a challenge that I had to fulfill, and I had to make a few final two deals. But I want you to know that even though I was required to make a final two deal with a few people, and you were one of the people that I chose, I do mean that I want to work with you moving forward, that my word is good there. And maybe Big Brother has told her that she can't, but I didn't hear anything that she couldn't say anything other than, like, I think they didn't tell her anything, right? Like, she could say whatever she wants.
I'm not exactly sure what the ruling would be there. Personally, I feel like this might be something I wouldn't want to be proactive about, because if she doesn't need to do it, she probably shouldn't. And if it ever gets to the point where she discovers that she's been turned on or that she's lost trust with people, she then has an explanation. Like, the reason I did that, though, was because of a thing that I had to do, production, getting into the house. I feel like it's more effective there. I feel like that's kind of the dance strategy of, like, hold on to your information until you need to use it.
I probably agree with that.
Yeah. So that's what I feel like she should do. And so right now she is also I think her biggest problem right now is that she did not maintain her relationship with Eddie. Eddie started to get really sketched out by the fact that she basically approached him with a final two deal and then didn't really talk to him much afterward. Then it seemed like Kaylin really trusted her. She was like, what's going on here? And then they compared notes and then they discovered what happened. They're sketched out by Corey now, but they still want to use her if they can. Corey has also started talking with Adam. Adam has started to try to reel Corey in, and she seems receptive to that. She did talk to Kaylin about it, and Kaylin was like, "Oh, play him, but don't really go with him." And so I think Corey is still kind of feeling around with where she wants to land, and I would not be surprised if where she ends up is dependent on who ends up winning the next HOH.
Yeah, I think that's probably true. By the way, I am very taken with her, Corey. She is actually the real 29-year-old, and I like the fact that I didn't love the fact that they gave her this task. It seemed almost impossible to do, but it did force her to really get out there and talk with people. And I like that aspect of her and the fact that she does seem hungry. And it seems like she's not anybody's number one target except for Dane, who apparently has like a plan later on to target her. It's like the 3-week plan or whatever. I don't even know, but I think she's going to be around for a while, I think, unless she screws up.
Yes. All right. That's what we've got for you tonight for the Sunday night episode. Still, you know, it's still up in the air as to whether or not we will always do the weekly Sunday shows. There was certainly a lot that we were able to go through this week, which is why I did the show this week, because there's still so much happening on the feeds and in the episodes. But moving forward, we may end up skipping these and just doing the Monday night roundtables instead. So, you know, just be on the lookout for that. But of course, we will be back for the Thursday eviction every week. Don't worry about that. And like I said, we will have weekly roundtables on Monday night as well. So we'll have fun there. And of course, I'm live every single morning to talk about the live feed. So you will not starve for content, I promise.
Yes, you are there every morning. Actually, I think it's become a very much a ritual of people to watch you in the mornings. I personally do not. I watch you later on in the day when it or either watch you or listen to it on my phone. Like when I'm driving, it's always nice to just have a podcast to listen to. So I love the fact that you do those.
Thank you. And just, you know, hopefully less daylight savings in the future.
Yeah, I heard. I saw that. I will stop by occasionally when I get enough sleep.
Yeah. I literally just like even right before this podcast, I was like on my couch watching the show. I was just like, oh, no.
Oh, well,
yeah. Daylight savings, I hate it, because the problem was that I was also listening to the end of like a really good book as I was trying to go to sleep. It was a bad combination. I forgot it was daylight savings. I got no sleep. It was bad. So you can follow us on Twitter. Once again, I'm at Armstrong Taren. Brent is at One Lucky Gay. You can find me on Twitch, twitch.tv/Taren Armstrong. And like I said, back tomorrow morning, 11 a.m. Eastern. All that great stuff. So thank you for joining us. We'll see you next time.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kid's PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.